Should we start this? Okay. It's only 1 minute left. Okay, I guess I can start now. I'm going to start by setting up notation and by giving an outline of what are we going to do in the course. So first, there were some questions about the textbook. And unfortunately, there is no textbook for this course. There are certain notes from course that Stevo gave a couple of years ago at U of T, and they cover certain part of the course. And we may distribute them later on once we get to that part. But the idea is that we are going to do first some basic pigeonhole principles, right, like Ramsey's theorem and some applications. And then we'll lift those pigeonhole principles to infinite dimensional versions and give some applications to Banach space theory. So roughly that is what the course is going to be about. And I'm going to start by setting up some notation. So if X is a set, any set, then by X square bracket squared, we are going to denote the set of all unordered pairs in X. So it is set of all pairs AB, such that A is in X, B is in X, and A is different from B. Now, in the case that X is set of real numbers, there is a handy way to think of X squared. Instead of thinking of this, we may identify X squared with all pairs AB that belong in X squared in the usual sense, but such that A is less than B. And for this purpose, I'm going to use notation AB sub less than means that stands for the pair AB. It also suggests that A is less than B. So it just it's not the same as BA. And similarly, we can define X to D similarly for any D in N, or even for D equals omega. We can talk about infinite subsets of X. Okay, I have just a few more notations to go. So if A is element of n to the omega, which means infinite set of natural numbers, and m is a natural number, then I'm going to write A slash m for A minus m plus 1. It just means that I'm removing m and whatever less than m may be in m. Just a reminder, I'm using von Neumann's definition of natural numbers, so it's A minus 0, 1 up to n. And also, if S subset of n is finite, then A slash S is the same as A slash maximum of S. Also, if m is bigger than maximum of s, I'm going to write s concatenated with m for s union singleton M. The last piece of notation is actually a serious abuse of notation, but it is going to be come in handy from time to time, and I hope it's not going to create any confusion. Why I'm saying abuse of notation? Well, this is a set, and this is some k tuple for some k. But as you can see from before, you'll be thinking about finite sets, but it's always going to be clear what is the ordering, so you can actually identify finite set with its enumeration and think of it as a k-tuple for most of the time. Okay, so the theorem. First theorem I'm going to state is, of course, Ramsey's theorem, which is nothing else but just stepping up of the usual pigeonhole principle. So just think, you have infinite set split into finitely many pieces. Well, one of the pieces has to be infinite. Well, Ramsey's theorem is nothing else but just that pigeonhole principle stepped up by using some abstract machinery. Here's the theorem. So if k is in N, also d is in N, and f maps N to d into k, then there is a in N to omega such that restriction of f to d tuples that come from a is constant. Just a little piece of terminology before I go to the proof. We say that set A is F homogeneous because all the D tuples that come from A are look the same for a point of A. So we say that A is F homogeneous or homogeneous for F. And also one way to state this theorem, some people say in Hungarian, that theorem reads as omega arrows omega d sub k. I don't think I'll be using this arrow notation very much, but it's just good to know that this is what I mean by this. Now, there is an anecdote about two mathematicians where one of them says, oh, I proved this great theorem, and tells it to the other one, and the other one says, well, but I have a counterexample. And then first one says, oh, but I have two proofs. I'm going to give two proofs of this theorem, just in case somebody has a counterexample, and also because proofs are relatively different, and each one of them has its merit. So first one I'm just going to give in the case when k is equal to d equal to 2, which is really the main case. So proof 1, case k equals d equals 2. Let U be a free ultra filter on N. So free ultra filter means same as uniform ultra filter. There are no finite sets in U. Now for each M in N, there is A sub N in U and I less than K such that F restricted to singleton M cross A sub N is constant. So I'm just using the fact that when you split omega into finitely many pieces, one of them is in the ultra filter. So this is just the pigeonhole principle. We are just stepping up this fact. Oh, such that it's constant, I already said what is I. So it's I sub m less than k. So say f of m comma n is equal to I sub m for all n in a sub n. Now I'm going to use pigeonhole principle again. So to each m, I have associated I sub m. And now, since U is an ultra filter, there is a set in the ultra filter. So there is some A in U. And I less than K, such that I sub M is equal to I for all M in A. And now this I is going to be that constant value of F. So what it remains to do is to just to pick by hand the homogeneous set. So we just start intersecting the sets, and so recursively find the sequence n sub j, j, j and n so that n sub j is in A, and if L is bigger than j, then n sub L belongs to the intersection over all, actually just, yeah, if then just n sub L belongs to A sub j. We just go on intersecting sets in the ultra filter and getting this, and then we can check that this is a homogeneous set. Call this B. Then B is F homogeneous. Now, it's not difficult to list this argument to higher dimensions. Actually, know that I have never used the assumption k is equal to 2, but the k is finite. What was important is that d is equal to 2, but then you can prove that k is d equals 3 and so on just by iterating its construction. Okay, there is nothing wrong with this proof, except that some people may complain that it's using assumption that there is a free ultra filter. And let's see, it's not necessary for Ramsey's theorem. But in this course, you're just going to assume maximum choice throughout, and you're not going to worry about whether some assumption is necessary or is not necessary, as long as it's consistent with the usual axioms of set theory. Actually, its negation is not consistent. That's somewhat stronger. Now, let us give another proof of this Ramsey's theory. The reason for giving another proof is that if you look at this subject, you see it very often one needs to do something like this, so to pick some sequence, intersect the homogeneous sets and so on. And I just prefer to do it once in the beginning, and then we don't have to worry about it, at least most of the time. Just do it axiomatically from what we have. So for that, I'll need to introduce some more notation. So here's the definition. A set F subset of n to omega is dense if for every A in n to omega there is B in A to the omega intersected with F. So in human language, this is just saying that every infinite set has an infinite subset which belongs to F. and here is the what I'm going to call diagonalization lemma. I was also tempted to call it the key triviality lemma, but I'll stick to this more nicer title. If f sub n for m in n is dense for every m in n, then there is a in n to the omega such that the following holds. You see, you cannot get that a belongs to each f sub n. That's not so difficult to see. But we can get the next best thing. There is a in n to the omega such that a slash n belongs to fn for every m in A. So A may be only in F1, or A actually doesn't have to be in any of the FMs. But you know that if you fix any element of M, every element M of A, then if you remove that element and all the previous elements from A, what remains is going to be in FM. I'll state this in part A. Part B, which is apparently slightly stronger, which is going to be quite useful for applications. If F sub S for s in n to less than omega, namely s is finite subset of m, is dense for every s in n to less than omega, then there is a in n to the omega such that a slash s belongs in f sub s for every s. So apparently part B is stronger because we have more dense sets to meet. But then you can see these dense sets are just indexed by finite sets of natural numbers. So there are countably many in each case. But that is not the proof that B and A are the same. So to prove, I'm first going to prove that A implies B. And then I'm just going to prove A. So proof of A implies B. Well, just fix family FS as in B, and then just define F prime sum M to be the intersection over all F subset of M plus 1 of F sub S. Dense, thank you. Thank you. That's a good point, and that's important. It was supposed to be part of the finish. Thank you. Right. Yes, right, of course. And for every A in S, if you look at all subsets of A, it's included in F. So without this assumption, whatever I said was false. So, but we'll be always able to make that assumption. Right. So in particular, what I was about to say right now would be false. So what we have here is finitely many dense sets. There are only finitely many subsets to n plus 1. And if you intersect finitely many dense sets, what we get is dense. And how do you check it? Well, you see, we just find the neat first dense set, then find another infinite set, find another. And you just import that once you enter first of those dense sets, then no matter how you take subset, you're staying inside that set. And so so we have this. And then if you apply A to this family, what you get satisfies B. Just apply A to Fm prime for M in N. So it only remains to prove A, which is, as I said, it's just a key triviality lemma. There is not really much. So proof of A. So we're going to find sets. Let's see how I'm going to call it. Let's call them B1 including B2 including B3 and so on. And also find the sequence N1 less than N2 less than and so on. So the following holds. First, we want B1 to be in F1. So that actually we first pick N1. So let's say N1 is equal to 1. And now how are we going to pick B1? Well, just make sure that B1 is F1. F1 is dense. So B1 is in F1. Now, what is the next step? Well, since B1 is infinite, we can just go and find the next element of B1. So let's say N2 is the minimum of B1 slash N1. Okay, and now what we do, well, how do we pick B2? Well, we just want to go up to N2 and intersect all those dense sets. So just make sure that B2 belongs to the intersection over all I less or equal than N2 Fi. And it contains, thank you, and intersects with B1. Thanks. Okay, again, we have finitely many sets to intersect. So this is going to be infinite. I'll just pick N3. N3 is minimum of B2 slash N2. And B3 belongs to the intersection of I less or equal than N3 of Fi intersected with B2 and so on.
If you're just proving A, you don't need to take the intersection.
I didn't assume that they are decreasing, unfortunately. Oh, I see, because then, because if I said, you see, it can just be that F2 is some very small set. You know, just imagine, you can just put that each Fi is N2 omega, but F2 is something tiny. And then just, I picked, N1 was 1, N2 was 3. So I just forgot about 2 if I didn't take intersection.
AM is an FM for
M and A. Oh, okay, it was supposed to be, thank you, okay, right, sure, right. So if I stated the lemma the way I wanted to state it, right, so actually maybe I should just go and make lemma stronger, thank you. Right. Thanks. So, typically, this is going to be the decreasing sequence of sets, saying there is no difference, but just what we really want is this intersection I less or equal than M of all Fi's. Okay. Okay, I'm trying to pull everything at the same time. So, right, thanks. So I guess any complaints about the current state of proof in the statement? Okay, so we just go on like this. And what is going to be the case is that NK is going to be member of BK minus 1. And BK is going to belong, so I don't have to take intersections. But since we started, let's just do it. I less or equal than NK, Fi intersected with BK minus 1. And just let A be the set of all Ni for I in N. Right. Then, what about A slash NK? Well, it is included in B what? In BK slash NK, because all the later elements were picked from this set. And this one belongs to F sub NK. So A works. Okay, now my idea was that once we do this, we are never going to have to do diagonalizations again. I'm quite sure this is false, but I hope it's going to minimize the number of diagonalizations that we have to do over and over. Definitely, once we go to infinite dimensional versions, we'll have to do some more diagonalizations, but I hope fewer than we would have otherwise. So let us now give another proof of Ramsey's theorem. Ramsey's theorem number 2. So what we have? It goes by induction on dimension D. So D equals 1 is just pigeonhole principle. Assume that case D equals N is proved, and fix F that maps N to little n plus 1 into K. And now for M in N, define function gm that maps N slash M to N into K by gm of some set S is simply, you just add M to S and compute F. This is just F of singleton M union S. Know that we don't have a syntax error here because S has N elements, M is a singleton, and M does not belong to S because S comes later. Minimum of S is at least M plus 1. So this is a well-defined partition of N tuples of this set. And now by the case we have proved already, we know that set of homogeneous sets for Dm is dense. That's simply one way to state Ramsey's theorem. The set, family of all homogeneous sets is dense. Every infinite set has infinite subsets in the family, and moreover, if you go to further subsets of a dense set, of a homogeneous set, you're still staying homogeneous. So then, by the induction hypothesis, the family F sub n, which is all a subset of n, such that A is GM homogeneous, is dense. So apply the diagonalization lemma. Now let A in n to omega be such that A slash m belongs to F sub m for every m in A. Well, this A is not necessarily homogeneous for F, but you are quite close. Note that for each element of A, for each m in A, we have this color for which that set is homogeneous. So for each m in A, there is, let's call it I sub m less than k, such that A slash m is I sub m homogeneous, namely that constant value of f on A slash m is I sub m. So since I haven't introduced this earlier, let me just say it. So this is such that G sub m double hook of A slash m is just equal to I sub n. Well, just apply pigeonhole principle. We have only finitely many values of I sub n, so there is a single value that repeats infinitely often. Oh, is this part of blackboard visible? No? Yes? Well, no, okay. I'll go there. So, fix I less than k such that set of all m in A such that I is equal to I sub m is infinite. Actually, I should give a name to this set. Let's call it B. Then B is F homogeneous. Why? Well, pick some S in B to M plus 1. I need to prove that F of S is going to be equal to I. Well, let M be the minimum of S. Then the remainder of this set, so S minus M is included in, actually not included, but it belongs to F sub M. It's homogeneous and minus. Oh no, but I'm removing the singleton M. So this belongs to F sub M, and also that color in question is equal to I. So, F of S is equal to I sub m, which is equal to I. Okay, now we have Ramsey's theorem at our disposal, and of course the main point here is that we have many applications of that theorem. I'm not going to spend much time on applications right now, but you are going to spend much time on applications because they have exercises here. So just remind me to distribute them before the end of the class. I didn't want to distract you by giving them right now. Give one application, a simple one. Let's call it, let's say proposition. So if Xn is a sequence in a compact metric space, if just its sequence in enclosed interval 0, 1, then it has a convergent subsequence. Well, of course, you all know this theorem. I guess you believe there are no counterexamples. Still, I'm going to give two proofs again, now for a different reason. So first, two proofs is specific to 0, 1. What we're going to prove is that this sequence has a monotonic subsequence. And then monotonic plus bounded implies convergent. So proof 1. Find a monotonic subsequence and then use monotonic plus bounded implies convergent because we are in compact interval. Well, here's the I just need to tell you what is the partition, and then we'll just check why is that why that gives us a monotonic subsequence. So I'm going to use make use of that notation Mn sub less than, because it is going to be useful to know that M is less than n to define partition. So what is f of this? Well, we take it to be zero if x sub m is less than x sub n. And we take it to be 1 if x sub m is bigger or equal than x sub n. Note, here it's very important that I know that m is less than n. Just this definition would be a nonsense if I'm talking about unordered pair mn, because I'm implicitly using the ordering of that. So it's actually, you wouldn't believe how frequent that is that error, that subconsciously you do think of some ordering. You define partition that relies on the ordering of these pairs here, but it just turns out to doesn't actually make much sense because you have unordered pairs. So just be careful about this. Anyway, this is well defined, and now we find the homogeneous set. So if set is zero homogeneous, what we have is increasing sequence. If it's one homogeneous, then sequence is non-decreasing. So if A is F homogeneous, then X sub n, n in A is monotonic. And by the remark that I started proof with, this ends this proof. Now, what is not so good about this proof is that it doesn't really apply to anything else. It just, it's important this is a compact unit interval, and we'll need to do something. So we'll need to go beyond compact unit interval. So I'm going to give proof 2 that will actually apply in the case when in the when we have a sequence in arbitrary compact metric space. So. For m in n, let B M 1 up to B M sub K of M, B open balls of diameter less than 1 over M that cover the unit interval. So this is all that I need about unit interval. So you can do the same thing in any compact metric space. Now define the partition as follows. So I don't actually need those open balls, I'm sorry. Just ignore them. Oh. Okay, I guess I had something in mind when I said this, but I can't quite recall what was that. So anyway, I must have had some other proof in mind, but anyway, so let's define partition f of m n I j sub less than to be as follows. The value is 1 if the distance between xm and xn is bigger or equal than the distance between xi and xj. Okay, this is your. Let it be 1 if distance between xm and xn is less than 1 over m, and 0 if distance between xm and xn is bigger or equal than 1 over m. Right, just doesn't now let's see, we have a homogeneous set for this partition. Let A be homogeneous. Now we have two colors, and one is good, one is bad. If set is one homogeneous, well, then what? Then we have a Cauchy sequence, and Cauchy sequence is convergent. So if A is one homogeneous, then xn for n in A is Cauchy and convergent. So we just need to prove that A cannot be zero homogeneous. But then what would that mean? Let's see. So if A is zero homogeneous, let m be the minimum of A. What does this partition tell us? Well, it says that I did need 3. No, but I have a problem now with this partition because it just says that all of them are a distance 1 over m. So actually, I do need triples here. Right? Yep, I should have sticky triples. I need triples, yes. Okay. Right, exactly. So that was here, but I just realized that once I take the bottom one, I just have one left. So it's mn, well, right, mn and k. So it's distance between xn and xk, and the same here, xn and nk, xk. Now let's see, m is minimum of a. So pick xn and xk in a slash m pairs. So we are just picking any two points in this infinite set. And what is the set A0 homogeneous telling us? Well, it tells us that distance between them is at least 1 over m. So then, distance between xn and xk is at least 1 over m. So what we have is an infinite set in this compact metric space. And okay, I can make some use of these balls after all. Just look at, infinitely many of these points belong to one of these balls for the case of 2m. So infinitely many of them are at distance at most 1 over m. So this is impossible. So since a slash m is infinite, this is a contradiction. Okay, there will be more applications, as I said, on the Tolan set. What I want to prove now is another partition theorem. So let me state here. See, what was important in Damsel's theorem is that the range of function f is finite, because then we can use pigeonhole principle and actually get a homogeneous set. Now, what happens if the range is infinite? Then, of course, we cannot necessarily get a homogeneous set, because you can just map each pair to a different color. But what we can hope for is to get function to be nice in some sense. So you look at canonical partitions. So what if f maps d tuples into n? Or more generally, just I'm going to look at the case when f maps d tuples into some set y. Just because those things in the range are going to be sometimes finite sets of natural numbers or real numbers or something. So just, and of course, the range of f is going to be countable anyway, so there is no real difference, but just it's somewhat more convenient to state our theorems in this way. Now, what are the nice partitions? Here's the definition. I think it's due to Erdős and Rado. So a partition F mapping N to D into some Y is canonical if there is X subset of D. So X is some finite set that tells us how the partition looks like, such that for all pairs S and T in N to D. Here I'm allowing S to be equal to T. We have that F of S is equal to F of T if and only if the following happens. The set S sub I for I in X is equal to the set T sub I for I in X. Just an explanation. So here S is S0, S1 up to S sub D minus 1. So this is just an increasing enumeration of S, and similarly for T. As a matter of fact, to save some time, for S sub I in X, I'm just going to write S restricted to X. Okay, now let's see how canonical partitions look like. Yes. 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 If X is equal to D, then I have 1-to-1 mapping. But so you see, a point here is that you have two to D. So we have 2-to-D canonical partitions for each fixed D. So let's see, what are the examples? If D is equal to 1, well, then we have only two choices for X. X can be empty set, and X can be a singleton 0. So what is canonical partition in case that X is empty set going to be? Well, F of S is going to be F of T if and only if empty set equals empty set. So this is constant. Let's say constant. And if X is 0, then F of S is equal to F of T if and only if S is equal to T. So you have 1-to-1 map. What if D is equal to 2? Well, now we have four possibilities for X. Again, X 0, X empty set. Then we can have X to be everything, 0, 1. We can have X is equal just 0. And X is equal just 1. Well, again, if X is empty set, what we get is constant. If X is all of D, again, this is 1-to-1, right? S restricted to X is just S. T restricted to X is just T. So it's a 1-to-1 map. What about X equals 0? What is S restricted to X? It's just S0, just the minimum element of S. And T restricted to X is minimum element of T. So what is this saying? That F of S is equal to F of T if and only if minimum of S is equal to minimum of T. So essentially, function S is just mapping each pair to its minimum. So F of S is equal to minimum of S. And similarly, if X is 1, F of S is maximum of S. So we have four canonical partitions on pairs. And you can go on just to see on triples there are going to be 8, and so on. What is the theorem here? To Erdős-Endredo, which is not that theorem due to Erdős-Endredo. They have more than one partition relation. So if F maps N to D into anything. Here d is always an integer. Then there is a in n to omega, such that the restriction of f to a to d is canonical. So in particular, if you look at pairs, then you cannot think of any function which is really more complicated than one of these four. Those four are everything that you need to know. Of course, but the theorem is really saying that the set of such A's is dense. Let me give a proof of this theorem. Proof proceed by induction on D. Of course, case D equals 1 is just a simple fact. You have a function, it's either 1 to 1 on infinite set or it's constant on infinite set. So D equals 1 is easy. It's essentially a pigeonhole principle. So assume the case D equals N is proved. And fix function f from n to d plus 1 into some y. Okay, so I'm going to define first the family of dense sets. For m in n, let fn be the set of all, let fn be the set of all b subset of n slash m, such that the following holds. Whenever you look at a pair of d minus 1 element subsets of n, such that for all s and t subset of n, actually not subset but element of m to d minus 1, one of the following applies. two, yes.
So,
oh, thank you. Right. Right. I was making a strong statement, d is equal to 2, and that s and t are just integers, but okay, but that's not what I wanted either. First, for all I and j in b slash n, we have that f of s union I is equal to f of t union I. 4. Oh, that was not, yes, right, thank you. Thank you, I was, sorry, right now I'm proving the case to D plus 1. Right. And so this is what you want. Yes. Okay, so case A is just that function does not depend on what is, for this pair S and T, no matter what you add later, doesn't really matter. Case B is again, for all I and J, this happens if and only if I J. Thank you. Right. So in B actually I have II. So it's this happens if and only if I is equal to J. And now part C. You may try to guess what is part C going to be, and natural choice seemed to be that for all I and J in B slash M, F of S union I is going to be different from F of T union J. But the natural choice is not as natural if you're deep into the proof. So I'm going to make a somewhat apparently unnatural choice. So again, for all, it's going to be somewhat look somewhat strange. So if M is actually equal to maximum of T, and the function that sends I to F of T union singleton I is not constant on B slash M, then for all J so it's B, I should say B subset of N, not B subset of N slash M. So B is actually set of all. Then for all J in B slash S, and for all I in B slash T, F of S union J is different from F of T union I. So before I proceed, let me just try to draw what this means. So here we have M. Set B looks like this. So B has some part below M as well. S and T are here. S is here. T is here. Clauses A and B are, I believe, quite clear. So either we can, no matter how you pick I and J here, then if you add I to S and J to T, compute function F for both of these, you just compare the values. And the idea here is that you can apply Ramsey's theorem to those pairs and just see whether pairs are going to be have the same value or not. So in case of A and B, you just have two natural situations. So in case A, just no matter what you add to S and T, just all the time you're getting a constant value. In case D, actually, value depends on I or on J. Case C is somewhat funny. So you see, in that case, T is here. Its maximum is equal to M, and you're allowed to pick J, or switch time J, to pick J here and I there. So a J can be less than M as well, or less equal than M. Now the main fact about this set F sub M is that it is dense. Now proof. Now essentially we just need to apply Ramsey's theorem a few times to make sure that this happens. So fix S and T. And now here's partition. Partition N slash M squared by G of IJ is equal to 1 if F of S union I is equal to F of T union J, 0 if F of S union I is different from F of T union J. Well, homogeneous set for this partition gives you, well, if it's one homogeneous, then we get B. So one homogeneous gives case B. What about the other cases? Well, so what if you're in case zero? Well, sorry, actually it gives A, thank you, it gives A. Okay. So what if we have zero homogeneous set? Well, then getting B is not that difficult. You just check for each, either there are infinitely many I's for which the values are equal, or there is infinite set so that the values are different. So pigeonhole principle gives either A or we get that all the values are different, or the following, what could have been, what would have seemed as a natural choice for C, C prime, that for all I and J in B slash M, F of S union I is different from F of T union J. So I just need to refine C prime to get C. Well, but then if the function I, F goes to T union I is not constant, I just have finitely many values to avoid. You see, there are only finitely many J's for which C can fail. And those are just those J's here. So I can just remove the finite set from B and get C. To get C, remove a finite set from B. And so the set is dense. Well, I did it only for pair S and T, but then I could have used the diagonalization lemma part B or just intersect all these finitely many dense sets. So FM is dense, and therefore I can use it to, well, to find diagonalization of all these sets. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm going to do first. So find B in N2, B in N2 omega, so that B slash N belongs to intersection I less or equal than M of Fi. The way I define them, they are not really decreasing because of that C prime clause that maximum of T is equal to N. So I'll just make sure that I intersect all of them. Okay. Now define another partition. G, that maps D minus 1 into a set Y. Remember, Y was that range set for the original partition. I also need another symbol which is for sure not in set Y. So I can just use axiomal foundation and just add singleton Y for it. So note Y does not belong to Y, just to make it sure that I have all the values right. And so define it as follows. G of some D minus 1. Let's see, I don't want D, I want D. Right? I went to next dimension. So what is G of S? Well, we take it to be A if A is a member of Y such that and for all I in B slash S, F of S union I is equal to A. So this corresponds to case, well, actually doesn't correspond to case, just just see if I needed a little bit more about one remark that I forgot to say here, I was not assuming that S is different from T. S and T are any subsets. So in particular, if you fix any S, then either A or B applies to it. So either F of S union I does not depend on I, it's constant, or all the values are different. So here just note F equals T not excluded. And therefore, when I'm saying here this, then I could have also said that there exists I, this equivalent. So just if the function does not depend on that last element, just let this to be A, and let G of S be Y otherwise. So if for all ij less than subset of B sub S, F of S union I is different from F of S union J. Now, what can we do? Well, we have a partition of D tuples, and we can apply inductive assumption. This partition is canonical on some infinite set. So let's see B infinite subset of B such that G is canonical on C. So let me just remind you what it means. So there is X subset of D such that G of S is equal to G of T if and only if S restricted to X is equal to T restricted to X. Well, now let's see how this X looks like. By the way, note also that well, the following falls from here, but just by ordinary Ramsey's theorem, we can assume that the g of s is either equal to y for all s, or that g of s is a member of y for all s. First case, if g of s is different from y for all s, what does it mean? Well, then, if we have any pair u and v that belongs to C for any two d tuples, let's just think of this, that u is s concatenated with I for some s and I, and v is t concatenated with j. So here, by writing this, what I mean is that I is maximum of u, and that s is initial segment of u. And also that j is maximum of v, and that t is initial segment of v. So what do we have? Well, f of u is the same as f of s concatenated with I, and this is just g of s, because g of s is not member of y. So g of s depends, f only depends on g of s, and also f of v is f of t concatenated with j, and this is g of t. And when are these two equal? Well, if and only if a restriction of s to x is equal to restriction of t to x. And g of s is equal to g of t if and only if s restricted to x is equal to t restricted to x, which is equivalent to u restricted to x is equal to v restricted to x, because x is subset of d, so just the last element is being ignored, as it should be, and also that's equivalent by that to f of u is equal to f of v. So in this case, we have that partition is canonical. So f is canonical on C. The other case, it looks slightly longer, you see, the information the other case gives us is actually smaller than the information from the first case. Yes. So simply just means that we are ignoring the last element. So it's the same next. Well, it's the same, but Menachem, we're talking about I and J. You're just ignoring the maximum of U and V. You see, just the point here is, of this is that F of U does not depend on maximum of U. Right. So then, so you can just ignore it. So X doesn't contain D, essentially. So, okay, so this is actually the input here. Just that D is not in X. So it's, we can just leave it. So the other case is gives less information, because if g of s is equal to y for all s in C to D, the only information provided by this fact is that D does belong to X. which is not mature. And I'm not even going to write it down because it's not not quite clear. So just you see, if you're in case d equals 2, the fact that d belongs to x, well, it can be that a function is 1 to 1 if x is everything, or it can be a function f of s is just equal to maximum or s. And we need to figure out which case applies here. And for that, we need to work slightly harder. So we're going to look at certain equivalence relation now. Actually, before, I'll have a claim. For all s and t, sorry, for all distinct s and t in C to D, and I can say the claim in a simpler way. Claim is just what it said, that D does not belong to X. Or rather, maximum of U different from maximum of V implies that F of U is different from F of V for all U and V in C to D plus 1. And this is not completely obvious, although it's not far, and this is actually the reason why I needed that formulation of C. So proof, well, U is F concatenated with I, V is T concatenated with J, and we may assume that maximum of T is bigger or equal than maximum of S, because the situation is symmetric. let's see what happens if they're equal. So if F of S concatenated with I is equal to F of T concatenated with J, well, that just means that the case C fails for this M. So then C fails for M equals maximum of T, which means that we are in case A or in case B for this pair ST. And let's see, so both should not be possible. A is not possible because we have a let's see. Let's draw the picture. So here we have T, here we have S, and here we have I and J. So if I and J are out there, if they're bigger than M, then this is automatic. This falls from the fact that A does not hold. Right, because if A held, F of S union will be equal to F of T union J for all I and J. And the B is not important here anyway because they're different. So the only problem is what happens if J is here. Actually, this is I. If I is here. Well, so if I is less or equal than M, what do we have? We have F of S concatenated with I is equal to F of T concatenated with J. And, that doesn't happen also by C, so that's fine. Let's see, do we have anything to prove here? Okay. So what is important is that the condition of C holds, that function I goes to f of t union I is not constant on b slash m, but that's because we are in case 2. Since the function I goes to f of t union I, is not constant, this holds. From here we have that the conclusion is that D will have to be a member of X. But now what more can we say? For S in C to D, let E sub S be the set of all T in C to D such that for every I in C slash S union T, F of S concatenated with I is equal to F of T concatenated with I. So for each S we have this set. And what can we say about this set? Well, note that if ES and ET can be disjoint, or if they have elements in common, they're actually equal. These are just equivalence classes for certain equivalence relation. Or ES is equal to ET. Now let G mapping CD into set of all ES for S in C to D will be just G of S is equal to ES. So we just map each element to its equivalence class. And now this is D-dimensional partition, so we can apply Erdős-Schrader theorem. So find D in C to omega such that G is canonical on D. So what we have is some X bar. So there is X bar subset of D such that ES is equal to ET if and only if S restricted to X bar is equal to T restricted to X bar. And now we actually have X. To get X out of X bar, I'll just add D to it. So let X be X bar union singleton D. Then